A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 45. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are talking about beasts. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello. So today we're discussing what happened when Nigel Neal left the BBC and went on to produce some psychological horror on the independent television networks in Britain.
Yes, this is definitely psychological horror that we're talking about in Beasts. It was 6 episodes, 50 minutes each. They were standalone stories that didn't have any characters in common. And there was a running theme of horror that was related to animals in one way or another. It ran in 1976 on the ITV network in the UK.
And as well as Beasts, we'll also be discussing a standalone TV play written by Nigel Neal called Moraine, which came out the year before in 1975. And we'll be discussing that partly because it sort of links into the ideas of Beasts, but also mainly because it's on the DVD set that we are going to discuss later on that we've been watching.
Now we have this idea of the backdoor pilot. I don't think this idea existed in the 70s, but you have the idea now, especially on American television, that someone will produce a miniseries or a TV movie that doubles as a pilot episode. So while it isn't directly a pilot for a series, it sort of is doubling as something that is being pitched for an ongoing series. And Moraine was not part of Beasts, but it was a bit like a backdoor pilot for Beasts. It was because that was made that they went on a year later to do Beasts.
Yeah, it seems to fit in with that idea. It's almost, as you say, the pilot or setup for Beasts. We should talk a little bit about why particularly we're discussing Beasts and why we wanted to watch it. I think the main thing that drew us to it, and we've mentioned him already, is Nigel Neal, a very well-known British TV writer. Certainly heavily involved in the science fiction and horror genres on television and in film. And as we'll go on to talk about, he almost could be said to have created British television drama, and certainly seemed to create the whole idea of event television that everybody was talking about.
Nigel Neal is a favorite writer and show creator of ours. We already covered his best-known show in British Invaders 7 and 8 when we talked about Quatermass, which ran for 3 separate serials during the 1950s. You can hear a lot more about that, of course, in the discussion when we talked about Quatermass, but it was one of the first big British science fiction television series. It really brought things to a new level, and it was a strong influence on many different things that followed it later on.
Yeah, I mean, certainly it's worth going back and listening to the discussion that you and Xander had on 7 and 8 about Quatermass, and a lot more detail about Nigel Neal there. But at the moment, we're talking about Beasts, which, as we've said, is this interesting psychological horror show. Really, I suppose, 6 standalone episodes, but certain themes that link them.
Yeah, the episodes are standalone, and they are all based on the idea of horror involving the supernatural, and more so, often the supernatural, but always animals or beasts of some sort. And sometimes there is a beast that you see, sometimes there isn't. They vary. And Nigel Neal, who wrote every episode of Beasts, took a slightly different approach each time. Part of the reason that we wanted to cover this, in addition to this being Nigel Neal, is that it is a psychological horror series. And so far, we have done very little with horror on British Invaders. We've done, of course, mostly science fiction, and we've covered related genres like fantasy and even speculative documentary and science fiction-related comedy with Spaced. But we hadn't done much in the way of horror yet. So this is horror and psychological horror, which is some of the most interesting stuff. And of course it is Nigel Neal as well, so this is something that we really wanted to look into for British Invaders.
And it's also probably the first sort of anthology that we've done where each episode is sort of only very loosely linked to the others by this sort of central theme of animals or beasts.
Yes. I usually define an anthology series as a series where the episodes do not share a common situation or common characters. So there is generally no particular order to them, and there is no idea that they're necessarily set in the same world or universe, if you like. They don't share a continuity, which is the case with Beasts. The connections are strictly thematic, mostly in terms of animals, of course. In some ways, the supernatural, depending how you look at it. Also, very often, the idea of human relationships and difficult relationships usually come into it. I'm not sure if it's every episode, but certainly many of them. You have two or three people who are in conflict or struggling with how they relate to each other in one way or another.
Okay, so how did Beasts come about?
Well, as we said, this all started with Nigel Neal. Nigel Neal was born in 1922 and lived a long life, died in 2006.
Nigel Neal had a very long and varied career as a TV and film writer, and we're going to sort of quickly flash through some of the highlights. As I say, it's difficult to do him full justice here. But for more information, as I say, go back to British Invaders 7 and 8.
We did cover more of his career there, but we'll cover some of it here as well. He was a staff writer at the BBC in the 50s, in the early 50s. And at that time, the staff writers worked on different things, but it was rare for one of them to create something entirely new, like a TV serial. But that was what happened in 1953 when Nigel Neal proposed and then wrote The Quatermass Experiment, which he brought to the screen as writer with Rudolf Cartier as director. And the two of them were a very strong team in the 1950s. They continued shortly after that in 1954. With an adaptation of 1984, which was not serialized. It was a one-off play of the week, and it was very well done. And Nigel Neal continued to work with Rudolf Cartier on Quatermass throughout the 50s.
Yeah, because then in 55, they brought out Quatermass 2, which dealt with the sort of idea of alien invasion. And then Quatermass and the Pit, which ran from, or ran over, I think, 1958 into 1959, with the somewhat bizarre and horrific discoveries at an archaeological dig in a London Underground station. And they were fantastically popular piece of television. This is where we get this whole event television where everybody was watching these shows and everybody was talking about them.
Yes, all of those 50s shows that we were described were performed live and for a live broadcast. It was at a time where things were very often only broadcast once and people couldn't record things. So you had the idea of the event where everyone would be watching their televisions. And Quatermass and the Pit was famous for emptying the pubs. No one was going to the pubs that night because they wanted to see how Quatermass and the Pit ended.
Absolutely, yes.
A few years later, in 1963, Nigel Neal did a drama called The Road, which was like a type of science fiction ghost story that sounds like a very interesting show from what I've heard and read about it. Unfortunately, all of it is lost, so we can't see The Road. The only thing that's left is the script. But it is indeed an interesting part of British science fiction at that time.
And then there's a couple of other highlights of his which do survive, and you never know, they may come up in the future on British Invaders. In 1968, he produced a show, or he wrote a show called The Year of the Sex Olympics, a very interesting show about the future of television, which amazingly in 1968 predicted reality television and what it would do to people and audiences.
It was a little bit uncanny how accurate it was, actually. And a few years later, in 1972, there was The Stone Tape, which was another of Nigel Neal's science fiction examinations of ghosts and ghost stories. He very much liked the idea of taking something that was almost mythological, something that appeared to be a ghost or a specter of some sort, and giving a science fiction scientific kind of basis to it. And that was something he first did in Quatermass in the Pit, and then it again did in The Road, and then in The Stone Tape. He was doing it again, where you had this idea that the stone of the building was acting as a recording medium that would record things that could then be seen later as an explanation for what ghosts were.
Yeah, and he was very good at producing scary pieces of television. Several episodes of Beasts will fit that close criteria. In the 1970s, he was no longer staff with the BBC. He was now freelance, and there were one or two problems possibly with his relationship with the BBC and with productions that he was suggesting for them. And in particular, I think the project to produce a fourth Quatermass television show collapsed at that point. So he was sort of at a loose end with the BBC.
And it was at this point that he made the big move and started working for ITV instead. So he went from the government-sponsored BBC to independent television. As it turns out, he did take the script for the fourth Quatermass with him, and eventually in 1979 that would be produced. So we did eventually get our fourth Quatermass. Before that happened, in 1975, after he made this move to ITV, they had a series of TV plays called Against the Crowd, and Neil was asked to write one of them, which he did, and that was Moraine.
Which, as you said, was a sort of, you know, it turned out to be a sort of backdoor pilot for the six episodes of Beasts, which were produced by one of the independent television companies. This was one called ATV, which is part of the ITV network, and that's as where we get to now. That's 1976, and these are the programs we're going to be talking about. And perhaps unusually for us, what we're going to do is try and cover each story individually, and also perhaps get on to talk about Moraine if we get the chance as well. The order they were broadcast does vary, because the ITV network was built, you know, made up of smaller networks, and they would broadcast these shows in different orders and at different times, something we've experienced before when we talked about shows like UFO. There is an original broadcast order that's listed on IMDb, but there's a different running order for the six episodes on the DVD set we've been looking at, which we think, as far as we know, was Nigel Neal's preferred order. And I think it's in that sequence that we're going to discuss them, Brian.
Yes, that may well have come from Nigel Neal, because he did in fact consult on a lot of things that were related to his work up until the time that he died in 2006, quite recently. Eamon, was it common for things to be aired in different orders and at different times on different ITV regions?
Yes, all the time. I mean, in the 60s and 70s, the ITV regions were really quite separate. And it would only be some huge television events and things like the news that would bring them all together. And then it was quite usual, particularly with genre television, it was quite usual for science fiction and horror shows, and even, I think, detective shows, to be shown in different times and in different orders.
Hey, look at this.
It's hollow.
Well, certainly not supporting anything, that's obvious. So we'll just lose it.
Wait.
What?
I think I can see something in there.
What?
Looks like a jar.
Okay, so let's talk about the first story on the DVD, which is a story called Baby.
Yes, Baby is an interesting one. It starts with a young couple who are moving into a rural farmhouse, and he is a veterinarian, and they are moving there to deal with farm animals in the region. They're well away from the nearest town, wherever it is. And when they're first coming in, the builders are there working to fix up this house that they're moving into, because it was somewhat run down, perhaps disused farmhouse. And they're just going through and redoing much of it and adding and removing walls and all sorts of things. And this is where the story starts.
Because when knocking down one wall to bash through from one room into another, in, I suppose, in typical 1970s fashion, they were making a knock-through lounge, they make a strange discovery in an old wall that they destroy. And not to give too much away, there is an old earthen pot or urn with something rather strange inside it. And their discovery will sort of shock and disturb particularly the young wife, the young pregnant wife. And what they find there bothers her. And then the stories that the builders tell her about local history and local events and legends, that really starts to get her very, very disturbed. And we get this sort of growing feeling of, menace and possibly witchcraft and strange stories from the past. And as I sort of noted when I was watching it, it's almost like a 1970s earlier version of the Blair Witch Project with that sort of feel to it.
It isn't filmed in the style that the Blair Witch Project was, but it does have something of that feel to it. And there's this building tension that is there. The entire thing takes place in this farmhouse or on the grounds outside immediately surrounding it. So it gives you a confined, just slightly claustrophobic feel to it. And it really builds throughout it as this woman is becoming more and more disturbed with what's happening and what she sees. And her husband is going from being happy with his new position where he is to being very frustrated and wanting to leave and just going from one end to the other, which exasperates things, and where she is horrified at this artifact that they find, he's interested in a professional way. As you can guess by the theme of beasts, what they find in the earthenware pot is animal related. And as a veterinarian, he takes an interest in that. And you get something that builds throughout to a somewhat shocking or disturbing conclusion.
Yes, absolutely. It was creepy stuff. Creepy stuff for the 1970s television. Worth watching to get to the end, almost, this particular episode.
I don't know that this is the scariest episode of Beasts. I don't think it was, personally. But it does seem to be the one with the biggest reputation for being scary and for having scared kids at the time. Kids who maybe shouldn't have been watching it. It was not an early evening thing. It was on later in the evening, right?
That's right. It was quite a late night slot, and there was there does seem to be quite a few people around now who remember or seem to remember having seen this rather dramatic final shot of this episode and being horrified by it. So worth checking it out just to see what scared children in the 70s when they were staying up too late. It does feature an early television performance by Simon McCorkendale as the husband, the vet, and then another sort of quite well-known actor, quite a big TV presence in Britain, a chap called T.P. McKenna, who plays the sort of senior vet in the practice, who laughs off much of the stories and rumours and tries to dismiss what seems to be happening to the young wife. So it's quite interesting stuff, baby.
Yes, and McCorkendale, of course, went on to work with Nigel Neal again in Quatermass in 1979.
So shall we move on to talk about the next story, Buddy Boy? Buddy Boy, so a completely different story, a completely different set of characters and setting, but again with a sort of animal or beastly theme. And this one starts with a young, I suppose we'd call him an entrepreneur or a young businessman, played by Martin Shaw, again a chap who's gone on to a very long and successful career on British television, but here he is right at the start of his career, very young. And he takes over a disused theatre, which he plans to use to extend or to expand his sort of network of, shall we say, adult cinemas and adult clubs.
Yes, he's portrayed as quite a seedy character, and it's not entirely clear if his business is all entirely legal or not.
It is a bit sleazy, isn't it?
For sure. And this space that he's taking over has a large tank, like a pool in the middle, that was used for a sideshow performing dolphin that was there. And Buddy Boy, of course, was the name of the performing dolphin that was so well known. And it brings to mind the idea that maybe this theater or this old aquarium building is haunted.
That's right. Yes, absolutely. Haunted, and haunted by possibly the spirit of the dolphin, which apparently, my researchers tell me, is based on a London theatre legend. Apparently the Peacock Theatre in London, which was for a while used by the Sadler's Wells Dance Company, they did have a performing dolphin act there for a while with a dolphin called Flipper. whose ghost is supposed to haunt the theatre. And so Nigel Neal obviously apparently must have heard this legend and working on that to come up with this tale of a disused haunted theatre. Or as you say, is it haunted or is it all just psychological? Is it all just something that's happening in the mind of a young woman who's found sort of living there, sleeping rough in this old theatre? And she goes on to have a sort of relationship with the Martin Shaw character, which again is a bit unfortunately seedy and sleazy. And his intentions are not always honourable, this character. He's not a terribly nice guy.
That's right. And we get the idea that this young woman was working at the aquarium and was very much attached to Buddy Boy, this dolphin, and got along very well with the dolphin, and went from just being an assistant to someone who would do performing tricks and things with the dolphin because she got along so well with the dolphin. And then the previous owner becomes involved, and it's clear that he is very scared. He's terrified of something that happened, perhaps related to this alleged haunting, or something he saw, or perhaps he may have done something, some criminal activity that he is trying to cover and is afraid of being uncovered. So there's something strange and disturbed in his manner because of that. So you get some sort of unsettling things coming from him and in some ways from the young woman as well. And then the entrepreneur with his adult cinemas is trying to take advantage of everything he can. So you get some unusual dynamics of the different characters here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as you say, the previous owner can't wait to get rid of the place, and trying to figure out why is part of the mystery, you know. And as you say, whether it's all related to this disturbed young woman. I have to say that of the six episodes in Beast, it is the one that in a way is slightly more, I don't know, slightly more unpleasant, really. I mean, it does have quite adult themes, and the Martin Shaw character is unpleasant, and he certainly uses and abuses people. So this slightly comical idea of a ghost of a dolphin actually turns into something quite nasty and edgy. And it's also, it does have a bit of gratuitous nudity in it. They took advantage of their late night slot to put some quite bizarre nude scenes in it, really, where young women will come into Martin Shaw's office and take off their clothes and then walk out again, basically.
It was quite odd. Gratuitous is definitely the word for it.
Yes, absolutely. Almost nothing to do with the story whatsoever, other than to establish what he does for a living.
And to establish the seediness and negative aspects of his character, I suppose.
Absolutely, yeah.
But there were some interesting things in that episode as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, you know it.
You were here again. I told you to keep out. But all the time, you were hiding under there. It was just you!
That's enough.
It was just her. That's all. Just her.
It wasn't doing any
harm.
She
has no right in here.
I have?
No.
I have. I used to work here.
She did nothing. I gave her old jobs. I was sorry for her. I'm a soft touch. Now get out!
So let's go on to talk about the third episode on the DVD in Nigel Neal's running order, which is an episode called The Dummy. And this one actually I think is much more interesting, much more to recommend it. This features a quite well-known actor called Bernard Horsfall, who we'll recognise from Doctor Who and from James Bond movies. And he, in The Dummy, plays a film actor who is in fact best known as
The Dummy.
Yes, this monstrous character who is the sort of lead monster or beast in a series of successful but low-budget British horror movies. And so he is playing, in effect, the man inside the suit that is, for some reason, enormously popular.
I love the idea of a series of horror movies called The Dummy.
The Dummy, yes.
And this character is clearly someone who does not enjoy playing this character, The Dummy, as he has many times over, and is at the point of being on the edge of a nervous breakdown where he just does not want to go and do this. And there is a broken marriage in his life that is complicating things, and it's all making him very upset. And he basically spends the whole episode right on the edge of breakdown.
Absolutely. This is monstrous actors on the edge of a nervous breakdown, this episode. episode. He's drinking too much. As you say, his wife has left him. She's left him for another actor who's working on the new film, the new dummy film. So that's driving him to distraction as well. And meanwhile, while all this is going on, his director and his agent are trying to persuade him to get back into the suit, which he hates, and to do it again because this series of horror films is so successful.
And we're given this idea of the tradition of masks and there being something mystical about wearing a mask, and that the mask has a kind of personality, a life of its own. And when you put on the mask, is it you or is it the mask that is now the personality and what you are?
That's right. There's this journalist character who's doing some article about the film series. And she spouts this theory about sort of social anthropology and masks and, as you say, the power of masks and what they make people become. So we have this character wearing this mask and this suit. And, I mean, as you'll see from the illustration on the front cover of the DVD set, the monster itself, the dummy, is quite ridiculous looking at times.
As it's supposed to be.
Yes, I think so. I think it's supposed to be.
It's supposed to be a series of cheap horror movies, yes. So it's supposed to look wooden and ridiculous.
It does look ridiculous, but then at times when the actor is inside it, it does seem to take on some of the power that the journalist is talking about. And there does seem to be a subtle change because things seem to be happening on the set of this movie. Something is going wrong, and then there's a terrible accident, or was it an accident, and somebody is killed. So there's all this stuff happening.
The dummy is a great example of something that is very common throughout Beasts, and that is the ambiguity of whether something supernatural and unreal is actually happening or whether it isn't, whether it's just someone on the edge of a nervous breakdown who loses it. And that was definitely part of the dummy, was that ambiguity of, is there something that is truly strange and different happening here, or is it just something psychological with one of the characters?
Absolutely. It's a very good point, Brian. I mean, Nigel Neal, he sort of hints all the way along that this may be, all these stories may have a hint of just sort of psychological problems for one of the characters, or mental illness almost. And just when you've sort of reached a conclusion that it's probably all in somebody's mind, then Nigel Neal will change the situation slightly and something will happen that make you think, well, maybe not. Maybe there is something actually supernatural going on. And that sort of happens throughout The Dummy and in several of the other stories of Beasts. And we also, as I say, we get in this whole thing which sort of links to that, which is, who is the person inside the suit? And is the Bernard Horsfall character always inside the suit when these things are happening? So it's great stuff. I thought it gave, I thought it sort of echoed back or had a sort of link back to some of the sort of Hollywood movie legends of people like Boris Karloff and Charles Laughton, who reputedly grew to hate their monstrous characters and the makeup and costumes they had to wear, despite the fact that some of these things had made them obviously extremely famous and successful.
It did seem to have elements of that.
Yeah, very good stuff. Michael Sheard, a well-known Doctor Who and Star Wars actor, turns up briefly in The Dummy. Another little sort of fine performance in there as well. It's an interesting episode, The Dummy. It's quite worth watching. It's quite weird what's going on, although, as you say, at times it is faintly ridiculous.
Beasts in general, I think for Nigel Neal, was a study in the idea of things being scary with animals, or having these creepy and ambiguous ideas and potentially psychological issues, but always coming down to somehow animals being involved and the idea of something horrific. It seems like he decided to take this sort of general idea and in each one of these six episodes study a particular aspect of that and a particular case of it. So I think that covers it for the first half of our Beast discussion. Next time, we will talk a little bit more behind the scenes about the production side on Beasts.
We've also obviously got to get to the other three episodes, including the rather remarkable final episode on the DVD, which is called During Barty's Party.
And we'll talk about Moraine as well, which was this sort of backdoor pilot, the 1975 show that was also an interesting one. And of course, we will give you our recommendations about what we thought about it as well.
Lots to talk about in our next episode.
Absolutely. So you can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com and at www.britishinvaders.com. We also have a Facebook group, so if you go to Facebook and search for British Invaders, you will find us there.
And on Facebook, you'll find details of the shows we'll be covering in the next few months if you want to play along and try and watch them before we do.
Ooh, exclusive advance information.
That's right.
So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yep, thank you very much. Do join us next time for the rest of Beasts. This is Eamon in England saying goodbye.